Officers from all over the CIA staffed CTC, but they had limited opportunities for home-based assignments. For freshly minted operations officers graduating from the farm, this was impossible. The DDO had not allocated any home-based slots for graduating operations officers to CTC. After months of cajoling and arguing, CTC finally secured one slot. I was gratified that several top graduating officers bid for this opportunity. The rookie we selected spoke Arabic and wanted to learn more, so we sent him on a deep language immersion course in the Middle East. The following year, he was recruiting and running penetrations of terrorist organizations. We eventually obtained more slots and more officers dedicated to the CT mission. Kofor pushed another initiative. We had discussed how officers like us have severe limitations in the CT business. Kofor and I were both white guys with limited ability to learn a hard foreign language, much less master it. There were others like us, of obvious European stock, although few as severely language deficient. CTC needed ethnic Arabs, Persians, Pashtuns, Tajiks, Turks, and others with native language capability and a lifetime of cultural knowledge, particularly in or near enemy safe havens. We especially needed Muslims as CIA staff officers. They could engage in communities where officers like me had near zero chance of success. Kofor called Gary Burnson, one of the few CIA officers who could penetrate terrorist groups. He was preparing for a foreign assignment after a tour in CTC working the Hezbollah account. He agreed to make time to help us. He was that kind of guy. Gary seized the initiative and developed a rigorous recruitment campaign to hire the kind of ethnic staff officers we needed. The CIA's Office of Security had problems with this, because almost all of our candidates had extended families in Africa and Asia. Although all our candidates were U.S. citizens, this family complexity introduced uncertainty in their clearance process, even with a successful polygraph. One superb candidate's uncle worked for a foreign government. He was automatically nixed. In addition, the personnel system resisted our request for a higher pay scale because it did not conform to their parameters. Angry but more determined than ever, Gary kept pushing. On a couple of occasions, Kofor and I intervened to clear internal CIA hurdles. CTC acquired a few, too few, of these new officers. Over the years, they would make an impact. One recruited a key source he met at a radical mosque. Another, posing as a businessman, penetrated a terrorist logistics network. Another gained sufficient access to compromise a communications node of an AQ cell. Our emphasis on unilateral sources did not diminish the importance of foreign liaison. We routinely passed selected unilateral reporting, once scrubbed for source protection, to foreign liaison. This was nothing new. CTC had been engaged in this since its origins. Once, for example, a CIA station in the Middle East acquired a report from a unilateral source about the travel of terrorist operatives to a small African country where they planned to attack a U.S. facility using rocket-propelled grenades and automatic weapons. The station sent the report, with immediate precedence, to CIA HQS, the station in the African country, and all countries where the operatives might transit. CTC verified some of the information through SIGINT traffic. CTC's operators and analysts, in concert with stations across two continents, worked quickly to answer key questions. Would the terrorists change their identities along the way? No. Was the timeline accurate? No, it slid by a week. Did they have a support network in the African country waiting for them? Yes. Was there a state sponsor involved? Yes. If so, which one? The state was identified through poor tradecraft by operatives caught in another operation in another country, whose false passports had numbers in close sequence to the more recently deployed team the one aimed at the U.S. facility. Did the state sponsor have an embassy in the African country? Yes. If so, would it be supporting the operation? Yes. The small CIA station passed these cascading intelligence reports to the local African service. This led to a joint operation targeting the incoming terrorist team. The station provided the intelligence and technical gear. The local service ran the operation with their operatives. When the terrorist team arrived, the local service covered them with surveillance throughout that week. They employed physical surveillance, telephone taps, and audio coverage of their hotel rooms. They took hundreds of photographs. In coordination with CTC officers tracking other parallel operations around the world, the service wrapped up the entire terrorist team, including the state sponsor's embassy-based support officer. They recovered the weapons. All the consequent intelligence from the bust flowed to the station, which reported to CIA HQS and stations throughout Africa and the Middle East. This led to more leads, more operations, and more attacks prevented. As another aspect of CTC's global mission, with permission from an originating foreign service, we often pass their intelligence to other foreign services. Most foreign intelligence services did not have liaison relations or reliable encrypted communications with other services on the other side of the globe. These smaller services also did not have CTC's database or analytical capability on a global scale. As terrorist operations grew increasingly global, so did CTC's role and value. CTC served as a global node of collection, analysis, dissemination, and brokerage to a vast network of foreign services. This invaluable role reinforced CTC's global covert action networks, both with liaison and with unilateral sources. A critical imperative, of course, was the maximization of both the liaison and unilateral networks, with all the complex risks these different, sometimes overlapping, operations bring. One important aspect of the covert action mission was the pursuit, capture, and transport of terrorist suspects to countries holding arrest warrants. CTC started this practice years earlier. If one country had a warrant for a suspect, CTC would help track the fugitive, often working with other foreign services. The intelligence on these targets sometimes originated with SIGINT, but more and more with CTC's own cyber exploitation. When CTC located the fugitive, the station would approach the host government service and explain the situation. There was a wanted terrorist in their country, and the station, with CTC resources, could help expedite his capture and transfer him to a third country that held an arrest warrant. In almost all cases, the local service would cooperate. The last thing they wanted was a terrorist on their soil. They wanted any intelligence related to the case, but they did not want to be saddled with the risk of holding and debriefing the fugitive. They also usually preferred to avoid the publicity that an extradition would create. Moreover, most countries did not have such extradition treaties in place, or if they did, they did not have the means to implement such a transfer. CTC did have the means and the authority. The local service simply, quietly rendered the fugitive to CTC, which was acting on behalf of the nation holding the warrant. CTC served as the operational broker and transporter. In coordination with the Department of Justice, CTC's lawyers cleared any legal questions, including those related to possible torture by the receiving country. Through the National Security Council's CSG mechanism, CTC coordinated the renditions with the White House and national security community. CTC captured and brought dozens of terrorists to justice and stopped horrible attacks throughout the world through this rendition program. CTC's leadership role throughout the globe spawned many cross-cutting cooperative relationships. CTC brought law enforcement, military, and intelligence services across the world into a growing collaborative network. I wanted to take it a step further. Realizing that enemy safe havens usually fell along international borders, I figured that more regional cooperation would be fundamental to our strategy of penetrating these areas. Intelligence services in any particular region often devoted more resources to their neighbors than to the terrorist threat. CTC could advance regional CT cooperation through regional conferences, a means of building better understanding and trust among our partners. Our first conference was in Southeast Asia, where we had helped our local partners disrupt a glowing Hezbollah menace. We were also concerned by AQ's links to affiliates in the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore. AQ operative Khalid Sheikh Mohammed had sponsored attacks in Manila. An AQ affiliate in Indonesia, Jamaah Islamiyah, was growing. AQ used Malaysia as a recruiting ground and as a place for meetings. The same was true for Bangkok, Thailand. Even in the highly